Flora Edwards. She is an ex-apocalyptic cult member. I wonder if she has that in her Christian Mingle profile.
Yes.
The cult was called the Children of God, or later I think it was called the Family. But she's the author of Apocalypse Child, A Life in End Times. Flora Edwards was born into a cult. Boom, there it is, mic drop. She spent her entire childhood preparing for the apocalypse that would never come. That's like every year somebody comes out and says that kind of stuff.
What was the last one? We had that guy on, didn't we? The last big one?
Can't remember.
All right.
Despite being denied a traditional education as a child, such as learning to read and write, good night, she took it upon herself to complete high school, complete an MFA in creative writing, and pen a moving debut memoir, Apocalypse Child. This memoir details her early life as a member in the Children of God, or member of the Children of God. The group's nomadic existence was based on the belief that as God's chosen people, they would be saved in the impending apocalypse that would envelop the rest of the world in 1993. See, I always knew the 90s were like the worst decade for music, dress. No, the 80s was hard. That was...
Dress, yes. Music was good.
I don't know. Peter Gabriel. There's only one song in the 90s I could really handle.
What?
She's So High.
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Flora would be 12 years old in 1993, so she was ready to die. Can you imagine that?
Nope.
Being a kid? The group's charismatic leader, Father David, kept the family on the move from L.A. to Bangkok to Chicago, where they would eventually disband, leaving Flora to make sense of the foreign world of mainstream society around here. Apocalypse Child is a cathartic journey through Flora's memories of growing up within a group with unconventional views on education, religion, and sex, whimsically referring to herself as a real-life Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
I thought, when I first read that, my brain said, Kimmy Gibbler. Isn't that the name from the girl from Full House?
Yeah, the crazy one, next door neighbor.
Anyway, Flora's clear-eyed memoir is a story of survival in a childhood living on the fringes. Flora, how are you not nuts?
Who says I'm not?
Well, we've spoken numerous times, and you're not. You're not nuts. Seriously, how are you not nuts?
I think it's about taking what you have and doing something with it, which is what I did. I think if I let it drive me nuts, I very well could let it drive me nuts, you know? I was listening to the interview we did a couple years back, and I was talking about how, you know, it has been a struggle. It's not easy. You know, I don't want people to think that, you know, what I went through, you know, it's somehow I came out of it, you know, clear and everything's great. You know, it was very difficult. And I sort of had to battle. I always say I battled a lot of demons that weren't my own. I think it's a choice that I've made, and it's a choice I make over and over again, you know, to not sort of let it take me down.
How many of your peeps did go down the road of, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Like, how many people that you were part of the family with, or the Children of God, as you like to refer to, how many of those people do you know kind of didn't end up too well after things, you know, as life kind of went along?
I'm going to say it's a very large percentage. I don't have an exact number. Throughout the years, I've heard of many children who did successfully commit suicide. As they get older, I think it actually has gotten, you know, tougher and tougher for them. And again, it's one of those questions where nature versus nurture, you know, some are doing very well and they've chosen to sort of take what was given to them, you know, which was this very unique story, and do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I want to do? There's a couple things. We've got lots of time here. I just want to just chill and just really delve into your life a little bit. But a gentleman that has helped me over the years kind of succinctly suss out some of the world religions or alternative religious movements out there, his name is Jim Beverly, Dr. James Beverly. And he's... Mm-hmm. He's got one of the biggest books on world religions published by Tyndale. Do you know Jim Beverly at all? Does that name ring a bell to you?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, but I'll look him up for sure.
Well, I've got his mini version here, sort of the Coles Notes, which makes no sense to an American. Why would I even say Coles Notes? They didn't. Did they have Coles Notes?
Yeah, but it wasn't Coles Notes.
I have no idea
what
that is.
Okay. Anyways, the short version of alternative religious movements. And here's, I want to read, it's a very short bit here, but I want to read through what he has written about the group that you were a part of, because for a couple of reasons. One, I want our listeners to understand what the family was all about, what the Children of God were all about, the Family International. And then I also want to know if your experience aligns with what he's talking about. So we're bringing our listeners up to speed and what you were involved with. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
The Family International is the current name of the group known formally as the Children of God, the Family of Love, and the Family. This controversial movement was started by David Berg in 1968 and has been the target of frequent police action, litigation, and media scrutiny worldwide. Berg is known affectionately in the movement as Dad, Father David, and Moses David. I'm going to stop there. I'm going to stop at every end of every paragraph to just check in with you to make sure, is that all true? Is that all what you have known? Mm-hmm. That's been your experience, Floor?
Yes, yes.
Anything you want to add?
The only thing is the police, what was the exact word? The police?
Frequent police action, litigation, and media scrutiny.
Police action and litigation. Yeah, the only thing I'd like to clarify there is that there was a lot of, I guess, different incidents, but nothing ever, you know, carried out to, like, a conviction or anything like that. So,
okay.
There's a lot of reasons for that, but yeah, there were multiple incidents.
Can you give us an example of what we're sort of, because it sounds like we're glazing over things.
Legally and just, so a lot of times the police would come to a home and raid it. This happened a lot in Argentina. It sort of happened to me one time when we had to get up in the early morning and flee. So they would come and, you know, raid the home and sometimes take the children away and investigate and put them in social services. And then somehow they'd always end up giving them back. They had a very strong PR system. They knew how to sort of hide, you know, the incongruencies that were going on.
Okay. All right. Good. David Brandt Berg was born 1919. His mother was an evangelist. Berg married Jane Miller in 1944 and 4 years later became a minister in a Christian and Missionary Alliance church in Arizona. Now, I know the Christian and Missionary Alliance church to be pretty moderate, pretty chill, pretty, like, they're not happy clappy, they're not off the charts or anything. They're, you know, fairly respectable organization. He was forced out in 1951. Berg moved with his wife and four children to Huntington Beach, California, the home of Ray Comfort and Kirk Cameron and the street preaching on the beach. In 1968, he reached out to the hippies of Southern California and soon had a small group of followers. Pause. Is that all cool?
Yes.
Okay.
That is. You know, I learned something from that. I knew that he was banned from the church in Arizona. I never knew what year it was, so that was information for me.
Well, I'm glad I could be of service. Folks, all the factual evidence you need right here in the Drew Marshall Show, which is such a rare thing. In 1969, Berg led his group out of California. They spent time traveling in the United States, settled for a while in Quebec. I didn't know that.
Quebec. Interesting. I did not know that either.
Yeah.
I know Texas was a big ground zero for him. I believe he had a ranch there.
Yes, and then they moved to Jordan's Soul Clinic. Jordan's Soul Clinic. It sounds like a TV show. Mm-hmm. Jordan's Soul Clinic in Texas.
Fred Jordan was a TV evangelist.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, that was 1970. By 72, the group was under pressure from critics, and Berg issued a warning about judgment against America. He and his members dispersed to different nations. Berg and his family moved to London, England. He was joined by his mistress, Maria, birth name Karen Zerbe, who was born in New Jersey in 46. Is that all cool? You good with that?
I believe that's correct. I did not know where she was from. I did not know they moved to London. But yeah, that all sounds accurate. Yeah.
Okay. Berg communicated with his followers through what were known as MO letters or MLs. Mm-hmm. ML 273 was issued in January 1974 and encouraged the membership to engage in sexual activity with strangers in order to win them to Jesus. This was known as flirty fishing and constituted one of the most notorious parts of Berg's ideology. The teaching was elaborated in 1976 in a string of MO letters known as King Arthur's Knights.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. You know, that's the sensationalistic part, right? That's the Jerry Springer part. That's the whole,
yeah.
Whoa, what? You know?
Yes, yes. And I didn't experience any of that. So people always want to know, you know, what my opinions are on that. But by the time I was born, it was, I believe it was banned already.
They had already banned it, okay.
Or it was shortly after, like in the 1980s, they banned it.
Okay. Do you know why they banned it? Like,
because I believe AIDS.
Because of AIDS?
I believe so. Or could have also been because of the media scrutiny. The
yeah.
media was on to the Children of God, dating back from the beginning. You know, what they did, they were always engaging in very sort of high-profile and controversial practices. And the media, they were constantly on, you know, the front page of newspapers and magazines. So I think they sort of caught on to the flirty fishing, and I believe Berg may have been under investigation, and that's why he went to hide out, and lived his life in complete, solidarity. And,
okay.
we never knew what he looked like or where he was.
Wow. The group had liberal sexual policies internally. Sexual activity was not restricted to a married couple. Some members made softcore videos for Berg. Some members only material contained graphic language and illustrations related to Berg's sexual instructions. This open model of sexuality dominated the family until MO Letter 1434, Ban the Bomb, restricted sex to those adults in one's own house group. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I guess I was aware of this. He seems to have really done his research as far as like Berg would number his letters. I think he wrote that or spoke thousands of letters. So I did not know these numbers, but yeah, there was a certain sexual, freedom amongst the adults. And yeah, there were restrictions on it. It wasn't just like anyone could, you know, be with anyone. There was, you know, they had rules and things like that.
Okay. The Family International, and we're almost done here. The Family International faced its most intense scrutiny from the media and the courts from 1988 through 1996. ABC covered the abduction of children from a family home, like a capital F, the family home in Thailand on its 2020 program in 1988. 2 years later, the police raided a group home in Barcelona. The Australian family was raided in 1992, and the British court system targeted the family in 1993 in a trial that was to last 3 years. The Argentine family was raided in 1993. In all these situations, concerns were raised about child abuse, particularly allegations of incest. However, little thought was given to the trauma that the police actions made upon the children. Your thoughts?
Interesting. This is all very interesting for me to hear. I was aware of a lot of these incidents. I didn't know exactly where the Argentina, I believe the one in Britain. So yes, this is all around the time that I was a child in Thailand. So I was aware of all these. And what did say the police investigations caused more trauma for the children? Yeah,
yeah,
it was scary. I remember being very scared about these policemen coming in and, you know, taking us away. So we were very aware of what could happen to us.
Berg died in 1994. Maria then married Peter Amsterdam, and they serve as leaders of the group. Maria and Peter instigated major policy changes in family practice, including warnings against physical, emotional, and sexual mistreatment of children. They also adopted a more relaxed model of church leadership expressed in the family's love charter that was released in 1995. These changes led the British court to adopt a more open attitude to the family in its rulings about child custody. The family has always retained many of the beliefs central to classical Christianity, though Berg had deficient understandings of the Trinity, biblical authority, and the nature of the church. They obviously departed from traditional Christian teaching in their radical sexual views. The group retains belief that it is morally right to have sex with others in one's house group who are of the opposite sex. They also teach that both males and females should think of Jesus as a love partner while engaging in masturbation. Any things there you want to comment on before we close this off with the last paragraph?
I know that last thing you talked about, it caused a lot of members to leave. They simply could not handle this idea of basically being intimate with Jesus.
Obviously, they haven't heard any of the Hillsong songs. Sorry, there's a lot of Christian music out there that makes it sound like they're writing love songs to their boyfriend Jesus. So
I guess people really get really turned on to this Jesus thing, and yeah, they really did. They took it, you know, all the way. And I do remember I was 12 at the time, and I remember hearing about it, and it was sort of sugar-coated, and I was kind of like, "What are you talking about? Like, this is really weird." So yeah, that was right before we left.
Okay. Last paragraph. On January 8, 2005, Ricky Rodriguez, Maria's son, killed longtime family member Angela Smith and then shot himself. Rodriguez, known in the group as Davidito, I think, taped a video a video before his death and blamed the family for the rage that led to the murder-suicide. He was once championed as the future leader of the movement, but left it in 2001. Family leaders blamed the media and the anti-cult movement for fueling Ricky's anger and violence. True story?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. That was the year I started writing my book.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take, you know, other people telling the story. It was the very first time that I saw on the news the story. Because when we were little, we would see, like, old footage. And I was always aware, like, when I came out, when I was a teenager and I would talk to people, sometimes people would say, oh, yeah, I think I saw something on the news, or I would hear about it. But I was watching it in real time. I talk about it in the very end of my book. This was 2005. I believe I was, gosh, I must have been... Oh, in my early 20s, going to college. And I remember turning on the news that night and seeing, I think on Dateline, or is it Dateline or Nightline, or one of those, you know, night shows, and seeing for the first time the media's portrayal of the Children of God. And I had been thinking about writing this book for a long time. And that year I was just like, I have got to tell my story. I have to let people see it through my lens. And I started writing it that year, 2005, the year he committed the murder-suicide.
Wow. Well, just to bring people up to speed again, we're chatting with Flora Edwards. She is an ex-apocalyptic cult member of the Children of God, author of Apocalypse Child, A Life in End Times. The website is floredwards.com. And Flora, again, you know, your story is you're sitting there reading, what was it, 17? Some teen magazine.
I believe it was 17 magazine.
And there was a quiz in there that said, did you grow up in a cult? And you did one of those quizzes and ticked off all the boxes and went, holy crap, I grew up in a cult. That's kind of how it all blew up for you. Is that a succinctly awkward way of describing the start of the unraveling?
Yeah, people always think it's kind of funny. It's a dichotomy, because here I grew up in this very alternative, sort of off the fringes of society movement. And then the way that I find out about it is through, like, a pop culture magazine. And somehow, I'm so happy that I came across that magazine. I'm sure I would have found out some way. It may have taken me a lot longer. But that moment of basically having the language to understand what had happened was very eye-opening for me. And it was actually a story about a woman who had escaped a cult. I don't know the exact cult it was, but it was just sort of like a companion to this story was this quiz. And I took the quiz and I answered yes to all 5 questions. And they said, if you answered yes to 3, then you may have grown up in a cult. And I answered, it was mind blowing. It was the turn of a lot for me. It was definitely the beginning of unraveling and understanding what had happened to me.
Sitting beside me in studio is a friend of mine. Her name is Lorelei Backman. And Lorelei grew up in Mormonism, grew up in
Hi, Floor.
Floor and Lore. Yeah, this isn't going to be confusing
awesome,
at all.
Yeah.
Starbucks often calls me Lore.
Who does?
Starbucks,
please. Okay. That's why I use Spanky when I go to Starbucks, just to make sure there's no confusion. So you and I were chatting the other day. And your dad, so Lorelei's dad is a musician. Was a member of a band called the Guess Who and Backman Turner Overdrive, BTO. And we were chatting the other day about some sort of celebs that he remembers this group having an impact on. Laura, do you remember those names at all? Because I thought it was maybe River and Joaquin Phoenix. Or
yeah, River and Joaquin Phoenix were born into it. Mm-hmm. They left very young. But that's why their names, if you notice their names, Joaquin's name was Leaf. And then he has sisters named Autumn, and I forget the other one. But yeah, very sort of hippie.
No, I think Forest.
I don't know.
Yeah,
Forest.
It was another nature
Run,
name.
Forest,
yeah. Yeah. River, Leaf, Autumn. I can't remember the rest. But there's five siblings. I believe they were in South America, and they left very young. So I think Joaquin was like 3 years old. Maybe River was five. And then Rose McGowan grew up in it, but she was in Europe, and she, I think, until she was nine. And her recently released memoir, Brave, she talks about it a little bit, but not nearly as in-depth as mine does. So, yeah, River Joaquin and Rose McGowan are three celebrities that were born into it.
Laura?
Well, I just have a question listening to what you've said so far. Did you feel like the moment with the 17 magazine, that was a cosmic moment of destiny? Do you feel like you stumbled upon that, you know, by mistake? Or do you feel like maybe there is something bigger out there and it's trying to red flag me?
Oh, good question. You should have a radio show.
I mean, that is a really good question. And I'm going to steer off a little bit and say that there were many moments when I felt like, honestly, like I was being protected by something out there, because I was literally thrown into the world with nothing, no protection. And I had these moments where I felt like there was something telling me that I was in this bubble of protection somehow. Now, I don't know if that magazine was part of it. I think it was my curiosity led me there. I was listening to my old interview, and I talk about how I would just read things here and there, and there'd be like little clues for me as to what happened. You know, it was like I needed to visually see something to make sense of what had happened. And so I think it was, I think I did have those moments you're asking about. I don't know if the 17 magazine was part of that. I think my curiosity did lead me to that quiz.
Did you feel like it was coming from some higher source? Something outside yourself trying to save you. Something outside yourself, you know, something in the universe saying, there's a better way, Floor, and it isn't this way, and I'm trying to tip you off to that way.
Well, so I think by the time I had read the magazine, I was already out of the cult. I just didn't know. So maybe you think that I was in the cult and this magazine took me out of the cult. No, I had already been out for a couple of years. I was just very confused and having a very difficult time. I was a teenager. I was in high school. So, I mean, the divine intervention was Father David dying. I mean, that basically just, you know, tore the cult up. Everyone had freedom and everyone could do what they want. But maybe there was misunderstanding as to the timing of when that magazine appeared. And it was after I had already been out of the cult.
Did you still believe in God?
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, look.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah. The timing, not so much as, you know, as there is something out there for me, and it's still trying to lead me along to a way that better fits who I am and what I'm supposed to do with my life, or where I fit into this.
I think I get what you're asking. I think those questions came a little later for me. Mm-hmm. I was at the time very upset, very confused. I was a teenager. I didn't really have any ideas about God. At that point, people seem to think that I somehow believed in all this when I was a child. I didn't really have a choice. I didn't really actually, you know, think like, I was very curious, you know, about what they were teaching me. And I mean, as bizarre as it sounds, it really was that bizarre, you know, and even as a child, I was constantly questioning it. But there were moments later on, like more in my college life, and as I did start to really get drawn towards spirituality and questioning things in a deeper way. But at that moment, no, I was very sort of turned my back on everything. Mm-hmm. Didn't really think about this idea of God at all. You know, I was a teenager trying to, you know, look cool and wear the right shoes and you know, talk to people, you know, have a social experience. I think I was 14 or 15 years old. So no, the idea of God was not on my mind at that time.
I want to throw it over to Laura for a second and ask you the same kind of question. I mean, you came out of Mormonism. There were some things revealed to you and you made a decision. Yeah, no, I don't believe this anymore. And next thing you know, you're trying to fit in, but you're trying to rediscover your own, like, culture. again, because there was a certain sheltered aspect of the way you grew up. Do you think that there was some divine steering going on in your world?
I do. I do. I had exactly what Flora is talking about when she says there's this moment of crisis of, I went from this very tight bubble where everything was prescribed and pretty much fear-based, because everything is how you're going to be judged on the other end, and whether or not you're going to make it, and are you ticking every box, and are you doing everything properly? And then when that bubble is burst, I wouldn't say it was a crisis. It was a void. It was just a complete void. But yet little things, I ask this of Floor, because little things happened along that way, and I would even say continue to happen at this point in my life, where I'm like, where did that come from and why now? And I'll give you a simple example. Was visiting Salt Spring Island and being behind a hippie in a little car, and they had a bumper sticker that said, God is too big to fit inside one religion. And it went straight to my heart, where I think at any other time I would have glazed right over that. And I thought, this is a message to me. This is somebody trying to say to me, you've been told your entire life there is only one true, correct religion, and it has all the keys of the priesthood, and it has all of these things, and everybody else has a portion of the truth, but not what you have as a Mormon. And I looked at this bumper sticker and, you know, thought, I think something's trying to get through.
Sure.
I don't know where it's from, but it's rattling me a bit.
Yeah,
shaking things up.
You know, go ahead, Floor.
No, it sounds to me like you're asking about divine intervention. And yeah, I definitely believe in all of that for sure. I've definitely had moments in my life. I tell people this, not all the time, but when I do have deep conversations, that I've lived through miracles. I have. I've had moments where I've known that something out there was protecting me. But I'm a firm believer in taking action. I talked about this last time, and I think if you align yourself in the right way, then you're open to those, you know, those sort of those signals or those clues that you're talking about. And yes, there have been many moments in my life where I felt like, you know, I was kind of being guided. And then there are moments when you sort of feel like you fall off the wagon a little bit, and you're in a more kind of confused state. But my answer is yes, I do. I have experienced that, you know, more on a continuous. It wasn't just like this one particular time. It's been more like a continuous thing in my life.
We are chatting with Floor Edwards. And Floor, like, at what point, I don't know where you're at. This is going to be weird. Just bear with me for a second. I don't know where you're at with relationships, and are you dating? Are you married? Like, where is all that at? Because I actually have a follow-up question.
Right now I'm single. People seem to always want to ask me that.
Okay, but here's...
I don't know why it's relevant.
It's relevant because, like, at what point do you bring this part of your life up in a conversation and, you know, that kind of stuff where people go, whoa, what?
Yeah, I have to say, it does make it very difficult. I think that's part of the reason. It wasn't the main reason, but part of the reason I had to write. Like, now I can just tell people right off the bat, like, hey, I wrote a book.
Yeah.
You know, you can look up the book. You can even read the book if you want. You don't have to. But yeah, it's not something that I have to tell them in conversation. And, you know, kind of, it takes such a long time to hash out the entire story. Which, if we have some time, I'd love to read a small, like, just a paragraph.
Absolutely. Go for it. Yeah, do it right now. That'd be great.
Not right now.
Oh.
A little bit later. I'd like to finish answering your question.
Okay.
But, yeah, it definitely, I was, again, listening to that interview we did a couple years, because I was like, what did I say? What did we talk about? And yeah, it does make things difficult. Not impossible. But I know a lot of the kids who grew up how we did, they sometimes struggle. You know, but I think what happens is you eventually find out that the right people aren't judging you for, you know, how you grew up. And if they are, then they're not worth your time. I've had people who sort of didn't want me to talk about it, or like, oh, it doesn't matter. It does. It's always going to be a part of my life. And now it is in a way my life, you know, because I'm promoting this book. But yeah, if they're not interested in it, and then, you know, I'm not interested in them. So,
yeah. Snap. My daughter taught me to say that. Snap.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Okay, how many siblings do you have?
There's 12 of us all together. So I have 11 siblings.
Do
I'm the fourth oldest.
Okay. Was having a lot of kids part of your group belief?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Father David believed that the world was ending in 1993. It was our job to save it. The West was evil, so we couldn't live in any Western nation, so we all fled to third world countries. And he also needed a big army to help save the world, you know, for the great apocalypse that was coming in 1993, when the world would, you know, dissolve into the great tribulation, and then we would all die as martyrs, basically. So the adults, you know, engaging in their, you know, sexual free, on top of all that, they had, you know, these free sexual beliefs, and yeah, they just had as many kids as they possibly could. So my family was big, but we weren't the biggest. You know, we were pretty large, but there were a lot of very, very big families.
Like how many? Woman, like how many? What's the biggest family you know?
I think the biggest I heard was 16 kids.
Good night.
But it wasn't my family. We're all full blooded, except for my older brother, who has a different dad. But the rest, 11 of us, we're all my dad's children.
And are all the siblings out?
Yeah, we all left so long ago. I think people need to understand that. I wrote this story. I started writing it when I was 23. It ends when I'm 18 years old. And that was half my life ago. Like, this book is the first half of my life. You know, now I'm 36. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like the first half of my life, but I've lived a whole nother life after that, you know? So when we talk about it, it is really like delving into the past.
Yeah.
Floor, long time ago.
Floor, Laura is also from a large family. How many siblings?
Well, 8 in total, 6 originals and then 2 more from a second marriage.
Okay. And are
6 originals.
Are they all?
When you come from a big family, you start to label, like, we're the first quadrant, there's the second
That's
quadrant.
That's right.
the first half. The
yeah.
Half.
Or numbers 1, 3, and 6 are.
Yes. I'm number 4. We're the parental committee because we're the oldest one, so we're sort of like the parents.
Oh, yeah. Man. I'm number 3.
Okay, guys, can I get the radio show back here? You two should never talk, ever meet again. Are all of your siblings out of Mormonism, or are some still in?
No, some are still in.
Some are still in.
Yeah. Both feet in.
Really? Yeah.
Do you talk to them? Do you, you know, how do you feel about Mormonism now?
I feel like I've tried to focus on taking the good from what it gave me in my mm-hmm. upbringing and the semblance of order that it gave me. I've worked very hard to not feel angry or disgruntled or let some mm-hmm. of my experiences control my life and just step away, because I see people who earnestly tell me on a regular basis that it saved them, that it gave them a structure that they didn't have before, that they love all the parameters and all of the rules because it gives them a feeling of security in their life. And for me, it just felt like a list of judgments that I could never meet up to. So mm-hmm. So I have 3 sisters that are currently active Mormons. And mm-hmm. I just, when I resigned, I gently sent out an email and said, just FYI, I'm letting everybody know so there's no giant upset, that my children and I have stepped away from the Mormon Church and we have formally resigned and we have found peace and comfort somewhere else. And we have no hard feelings. I hope that everybody would still feel free to act the same way that they did beforehand, knowing that there's no threat. Because once you step outside of Mormonism, you lose your tribe, because it's, well, what did she do? Did she read anti-Mormon literature? Well, anything that, I mean, the church itself has literature that it calls anti-Mormon literature because it's honest and it's not the selective history that they present. So that makes it really difficult to determine what is anti-Mormon literature and what is just the truth, and it's not being taught mainstream every Sunday, mm-hmm. right? So there were things like that where I thought, I never want to be in a position or at a family gathering where my family feels like they need to be standoffish with me because I've stepped away. Mm-hmm. So I just chose a brief diplomatic email.
I want to suggest a possible future for you two, a podcast with Floor and Lore.
Yes.
Hey, Floor, First of all, I just want to drive people to this book because there's so much to talk about. We're running out of time here, and I want people to go to this book. So the Children of God is the group that she was involved with. The book is called Apocalypse Child, A Life in End Times. The website is floredwards.com, floredwards.com.
It's on Amazon.
Yes, on Amazon. That's where everyone goes to get books these days. Mm-hmm. Do you have in your book the whole, if you have somebody you think is involved in a cult, here are the warning signs kind of stuff? Or is it really just sort of your journey?
It's more my journey. It's a narrative, you know. I think through reading it, you might start to think, you know, this is not a self-help book. It's not, you know, it's not one of those how to spot cult. Maybe one day I'll write, you know. I think I've learned a lot about that. But no, I that's not what this book was intended to be at all.
Okay. Know? And then finally, how does someone leave a belief system and continue to believe?
That's a good question. I think through experience. I have a difficult time believing just for the sake of believing. I need something more to grasp onto. I need some sort of experience, you know.
See, both you and Laura grew up with a form of Jesus or an entry point into this Jesus stuff, you know. Laura, yours was through Mormonism, and Floor, yours was through the family or the Children of God. And then I guess let me just finish with this. What did you do with Jesus? Because Jesus was a big part of both of your lives. So what have you done with Jesus? Floor?
I love Jesus.
You say it sounds like a Doobie Brothers song.
Or Homer Simpson.
Or Homer Simpson, yeah. Are you a follower of Jesus still? Or
I think people's perceptions of Jesus have been wildly skewed. And, you know, Jesus was a man who walked this earth. And there's a lot of literature out there on who Jesus was. Mm-hmm. I think Jesus gets put up on this pedestal as if he's the only sort of prophetic figure of our time, and he's not. There were many, many people who walked this earth who had messages for the world, and that's really who Jesus was. He was a person who came to this earth, however he came, you know, that's still up for debate. And he walked this earth, and he had a message to share. His message was not bad. I don't think his message was bad at all. In fact, it was very good. But what happened is people took his message. In fact, I talk about it at the very end of my book, where I say, I think God can be a dangerous word. That's kind of my closure in all of this, is that Jesus came to this earth and he did good things, and then people came and screwed it up.
Yeah, my co-hosty, what are we calling you, Tim?
Village idiot.
Okay, that'll work. My pal here, Tim, has a shirt that says something like, what is it?
God is not the problem, it's his fan club.
Yeah, God is not the problem, it's his fan club. Does that work with you?
Yeah, I say right here, I'll read, this is just super short. I'm talking to my brother and I say, I think Jesus was a good man, I said. I think humans mess things up by interpreting his words. Maybe Jesus never meant to start a religion. I distrust interpreters like Father David, I told John when he came back. I think God can be a dangerous word. So that's sort of towards the end of the book, very short little passage there. I think people mess up religion in a variety. Religion did not start out as, you know, how it is now. It started out as a very ritualistic practice. I'm actually reading Karen Armstrong right now, who writes about religion.
Yeah.
And she talks about how it's and this is what I truly believe. There's very important aspects of religion, and two of them, I think, are ceremony and worship. So connecting with other people, community is very, very important. And worship is very, very important. So, the thing about not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think when you've had an experience like this where, yes, it was very dark, and in some ways I did see a very dark side of religion, I can't throw it all away and just say it's all bad. I did have a very clear moment when I was probably around 17 years old, where I was hanging out with some friends, and I was doing better. I was no longer that wild teenager. I was a little bit like, you know, I had some guidance in my life. I was in college, and a friend of mine said, he kind of said, yeah, I'm an atheist. I remember thinking to myself, I can't say that I'm an atheist. Like, that was, I think, the first time I heard that word in such a casual way, because Father David would talk about atheists as if they were, you know, the most evil people ever. you know, and here it is, my friend, he's just like, yeah, I'm an atheist. And I was just like, I didn't think he was a bad person, but it just made me think, wait, am I an atheist? And I was like, no, I'm not an atheist. I don't believe in nothing, which I think that's what atheists, they believe this is it, and then we die and we're gone.
Yeah.
And I just knew, I didn't really have a belief system, but I did know that that wasn't it for me.
All right, let's finish. We're totally out of time. Man, it's so easy to talk with you. Thank you, Floor, for coming back on the show. Can you read that excerpt now?
I'm sure I can. Give me one second. I lost it because I was...
That's okay. So again, just everyone, the website is FloorEdwards.com, and the book is called Apocalypse Child, A Life in End Times. And we're speaking with Floor Edwards, who is an ex-apocalyptic cult member of the Children of God. Floor?
Yes. So this passage, it's sort of towards the end of the book. This is, I discovered writing in college, and that's when I decided I wanted to write my book. So this is just a little passage about my process. As I started to write, I discovered my childhood was a gold mine for material, no longer a piece of my past weighing me down. It had color and texture, darkness and tragedy too, but most of all, I had something to work with. Like a potter uses clay, I had material with which to form stories. When I wrote, I had a voice, something I never had growing up. I began to realize that my mind was the most powerful tool I possessed, and all my life it had been controlled by a man who claimed to be the voice of God. The thought enraged me. It was something Tamar and I talked about. We talked about our family. We shared memories from childhood, but the lens through which we viewed it was now crystal clear. We understood what had happened. We did research and read books and understood what cult meant. We read articles on the Children of God and saw it from the outside. We watched documentaries. Unlike some of our childhood friends who blamed their circumstances on the past, we decided we wouldn't be victims.
Man. There you go. I mean, that's it right there. That's the proof.
If you want to hear how I got there, then read the book.
There you go. That's the hook. Well done. She's a marketing genius as well. Floor Edwards. Floor, thank you so much. And Laura, I appreciate you being part of that conversation. You two really have so many parallels that it's uncanny. And maybe one of these days you can connect with each other. Floor, if you ever come up to the Toronto area, you make sure you come and co-host this show, okay?
Oh, I definitely will, for sure.
All right.
I'm doing a lot of stuff right now for this book, so who knows? I might end up there.
Good, good. Thank you, Floor.
Yeah, it is available. It's available in Canada, and definitely Amazon is the best way to get it.
That's the way to do it. Thank you, Floor. Have a good weekend.
Thank you so much, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye, Floor. By the way, Floor mentioned Tamar, and that's her twin sister. So when we had them on, it was going to be both of them, but Tamar had to split. What do you want?
It would have helped with the confusion between Floor and Laura to have that extra name in there.
Yeah, the Tamar, Floor, and Laura.
Yeah, just to throw a wrench in the works.